was lost, the treaty signed, I was not caught across the line, I was not caught, though many tried, I live among you, well disguised, I had to leave my life behind.
So I guess we'll walk. This isn't like the Game of Thrones song, so it's kind of weird introing it, but this is a True Detective song, the new season. So we're doing it's really weird. This is the first week we're doing a True Detective show versus the Game of Thrones show that we do every week because it's on hiatus. And
but essentially what's going on is it's we are better than, or not we are better, sorry, more like TV shows, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
More like TV.
More like TV. The new series that on here are more like radio, where basically we would take the active seasons of TV shows and talk about them.
Good ones. And by the way, another HBO show, because let's face it, HBO does have the best shit.
They rule.
So on tonight's show, we have Marie. We have Marcus joining us, Ramcatster, as you can see him. He's on camera today. Also, we have Joel, as you just heard. Is anybody else on?
Just four of us.
Cool. Awesome. All right. So True Detective, before we get going with season two, has everyone seen season one, or is this?
I have not, so I'm the newbie on the show.
Okay. Totally fresh.
I saw season one. I know, Mark, you did too, right?
You need to get on that immediately.
Yeah, season one was great. Season two, it's hard to, I mean, they're setting something up, clearly. I guess we'll start since the first episode with the cast. I mean, the two main actors in this one are Vince Vaughn and Colin Farrell. And then there's, what's his face? God, what's his name? That's good. Fucking sexy Scarface.
Taylor Kitsch.
I was going to say Vincent D'Onofrio.
No,
Taylor Kitsch, who is also John Carter, and he was also in Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. So, it was confusing first off. I mean, only because they're setting it up. From what I'm picking up, Vince Vaughn is some sort of property shady mobster dude, kind of.
Wait, let me interrupt you first, because the other actor that's in here that's kind of sort of right is Rachel McAdams, who was in The Notebook.
Yes, Rachel McAdams and Mean Girls.
That's right. That's right.
Rachel McAdams.
I have such a boner for
her. Oh, God. She is hot. Absolutely.
You haven't even been in the show 3 minutes and we're already talking about your boner towards Rachel
McAdams.
Well,
we have to.
Dude, she was also in Sherlock.
I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. She was in Sherlock, too. The movie, anyway. But
in this show, she seems to play some sort of hard ass.
Yeah. By the way, first off, we have to compliment top-notch mustache Colin Farrell. Goddamn. Not many people could pull that mustache off. He pulls it off.
I was thinking about that when I saw it. Yeah, it was Tom Selleck.
Yeah. So, from what I'm picking up, Colin Farrell's wife was raped. And apparently
that was the opening scene, by the way. Yeah. You know you're in for a good season and a series or type of a show where the opening scene starts with him talking to a lawyer and talking about how his wife got raped and that their redheaded son may not be his.
Well, it clearly isn't his, because be honest.
Clearly.
Guys, come on. You guys aren't paternity experts. I'm pretty sure that's his kid.
I mean, that looks more like the kid from fucking Bad Santa.
I mean, I've had two abortions under my belt. Does that make me a paternity expert?
Well, it makes you a not having to pay child support expert, which is nice.
Listen, if Colin Farrell has Thurman Merman as his son, so be it.
So be it.
I didn't even catch the fact that this child could be the result of his wife's brutal sexual assault until I watched it the second time, which made it even worse.
Yep.
When I was just finally coming to the realization that, holy crap, it's not, they're not even wasting time like you were saying.
No.
They're just off the bat, we're going towards depressing shit immediately.
Well, the thing is, though, like with any type of a TV show, especially ones that are one season offs, like what it seems like this series is going to be, similar to the last series, that, you know, just one group of actors, you know, 10, 15 episodes, whatever, it's finished.
8 episodes.
They kind of have to grab you by the balls from the beginning, otherwise you're not going to watch it anymore. It's like that whole ADD culture that we live in that, like, if you don't have a show that hits hard really at, you know, out of the gates, then you're dead in the water.
I'm excited because if you think about it, this is the first time that we've really had good summer TV. Because for many years, remember, once summer came, that's it. Good TV is over, you know? You would just have to wait. You would get the shitty USA shows, but now you have good TV year long. Even like June, you normally don't have TV shows, you know, going into July. So it's really impressive to see like these high end, you know, TV shows actually coming out in the summer and people are watching them just as much. At least I think. But I mean, getting back to the plot, I mean, who do you want to start with? Do we want to start with Rachel McCranky Tits?
Let's talk about her. I mean, you meet her character. Apparently, she did something pretty fucked up in bed, or not fucked up, like by our standards, but okay, I guess by this guy's one standards.
What did she do? What is everyone's opinion on that? Because we were trying to wrap.
I don't know. Like
it out.
I think it had to have something to do with butt stuff, but what specifically, I don't know.
You know what I think it is? Just seeing how much of a hard ass she is. And I've told this story on the air in my other shows, for those of you who are listening for the first time, Hippo Juice and Dutch and Royce. I think I've mentioned this story to you guys a couple times in that one of the redheads that I've had in my life punched me in the face and called me a faggot. And and it was like the hottest thing ever to happen to me.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm assuming that happened to him and he just got taken off guard like, whoa, you just called me a gay slur, like, what, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So she probably was just taking out the aggression on her hipster father, which, by the way, that actor, I know him, but I don't know his name. Like,
David Morse.
What was this guy's name?
David Morse. He was in The Rock.
Yes. God damn it. Yes, that's what he was.
So I'm thinking that's what it was. Something violent, something aggressive where she really took control, and probably something demeaning where she probably called him a faggot.
Or even to herself, but with her character all, you know, trying to be in control and then leading up to the sting operation that her and her team had where they broke into this house and they have warrants and they're busting
Vice cop, by the way, for the listening audience, she's a vice cop from what it seems like.
What is her name? Her name is Antigone, but what is her last name? Does anybody know?
Sexy McHotbutt.
Sexy McHotbutt. So Annie Sexy McHotbutt busts into this house, catches her sister, lets her sister know that this was all a ruse because she was hearing a rumor
doing
that
porn.
Her sister is doing porn, and then it turns into a thing that I didn't necessarily agree with her on.
No!
I was siding with the sister the entire time.
No, she's not. Let's be honest. Nothing she did was likable.
No.
Nothing she did I go, I feel bad. I mean, I'm sure we're going to feel bad for her later when we figure it out. I want to talk about first episode, not what I think's happening. As far as in the first episode is concentrated, I didn't like her. I thought her hippie dad, no matter how hippie he was right when he was telling her, I don't give a fuck what she does, you know? Like, I don't care what she does. Because she was more mad at her dad for not being as outraged as she was as her sister was doing porn, you know? And when he says, you need to help your daughter. And when she walks away, he's like, I just did. Like, you know, because I know that she's, I think the funniest part is, or the part that doesn't make sense to me, on the one hand, she's doing something, you know, whatever in that world that she's in, is considered sexually degrading or just intense, you know. But then she talks down to her sister for doing porn. Like, it seemed kind of hypocritical to me, you know what I mean?
What it seems like, though, is she's one of those ultra-conservative people. And generally, the ultra conservatives are the ones who are the craziest ones behind the doors. You know what I mean? Like behind the, you know, in bed, they're weird as long as it's not projected and portrayed out there. Because the rest of her family, except for her mom, who apparently killed herself, which what we learned later in the episode, her sister and her dad were like, you know, crazy liberal and hippies and yada yada yada. So I think that's probably the narrative they're trying to like establish where. She's the only, at least what she thinks, Rachel McAdams is thinking she's the only level-headed, you know, straight-thinking person. Even if she's wrong, she's probably one of those types that has to be right, yada, yada. So I think that's the reason why they were establishing that whole storyline.
Oh, really quick, since I forgot, as we talked about, I liked the song for the intro I didn't like so much, but the art stylization I thought was, like, the actual visuals I thought were cool.
Yeah, they're like, really great. They've done a bang up job, I think, with all HBO shows since The Sopranos, with intro scenes and that whole thing.
And it was
nothing will top The Wire, though. Every season it was the same song, but a different version of that song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No other show could pull that off.
Yeah.
However, getting back to Annie's conversation with her dad, I think it was very telling that he even said, and, you know, was talking, just kind of breaking down their conversation. He's saying that, you know, I don't want to argue with you. I know that that's what you want to do because you're projecting your anger on me, your hatred about my life. And then what actually would be applicable to really all three police officer characters in the show thus far is that, do you even like what you do, guys? Really?
No, it seems like they have a slight amount of resentment for what they do, but they're good at it, so that's where they do it.
Number two, I hope that they have flashbacks like they did for Taylor Kitsch's character, Woodra, and also like they did for Velcora, which is Colin Farrell's character, because something happened, not just Mom's death, but also something that happened directly to her, and I hope they try to, you know, at least show you what did happen, because otherwise she's going to be completely unlikable, because that's how she felt with me, so.
Right. Now, moving on to Motorcycle Cop Guy.
Yeah.
So that hot bitch that he had to take a Viagra.
Did he fuck her, you think?
Oh, he definitely did. She was sucking his dick by the end of it. But the thing is that, like, he had to take a Viagra, wait a half hour. But the thing is, like, if you
he made the worst, like, face getting blown, by the way.
Well, the thing is, dude, like, I think, and they mentioned it, like, he, I guess, was served in the military at one point. So he probably has, like, a lot of flashbacks, a lot of, you know, anxiety. That's the reason why he has to turn the lights off on his motorcycle while he's driving 100 miles an hour to feel something. I think they're going to have flashbacks.
Oh, they always do. The first season would go back and forth, like, 20-year gaps, you know?
Right. So I'm sure that with Motorcycle Cop's character, they're going to be going back and forth with him being in Iraq.
Now,
I'm sure.
When I first saw the scars in him, the first thing I thought, only because he was a motorcycle cop, was that it was road rash. So he had a really bad accident. But then they focused on his hand, where it kind of looked like he had either grayscale from Game of Thrones or, like, the Fight Club kiss. Like, it didn't look like it looked like a burn or an explode. I don't know what it didn't. I don't feel like it's going to be road rash, but
I'm thinking some with the military.
I would say that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. The blowjob bothered me. The face that he made during the blowjob was hilarious. I was like,
you know what that face was? It was like, yes, I'm hard. I don't have to be worrying about this anymore.
It looked like he was constipated. That's what he looked like.
Yeah. Like he was going to, yeah.
Look at my face.
That's
face
just,
right
just
now.
Taylor Kitsch's face.
Yeah. But by the way, that chick that was hot, though. Come on.
She's ultra hot. Woo! And I don't know why. I don't know why Taylor Kitsch's character, Woodrum, name is Woodrum.
Yes.
I don't know why you need Viagra, dude.
No, that chick was, well, I think it's what Dutch said. I think he's so fucked up psychologically. I think that's the whole that they were pointing across, even when, like, he didn't look, he was enjoying sex. Like, I really feel like he's so fucked up psychologically that maybe that's why he is the way he is. But what I want to see still is, even after watching all three, I want to see how these all three stories are going to connect. Because they're going to connect somehow.
They did. They did at the end of this episode.
No.
They all were there, and then they were all right there at Casper.
Right.
So.
The other thing that I guess we'll just go back to Taylor Kitsch in a bit, but I guess I wanted to move to Colin Farrell. What's his name, Colin Farrell's character?
Ray Velcora.
First off, I want to point out that I understand you're wearing a bulletproof vest under your, but then buy a bigger police shirt, because that was ridiculous. I was only focused on how tight his police shirt was. When he walked in, the flashback when he walked into the bar.
What?
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, when he goes and he meets Vince Vaughn to acquire information on who, in fact, had raped and assaulted his wife, which I guess is the beginning of their relationship, because it alludes in that portion towards what happens in the end, which we can talk about later on. But yeah, I think his shirt shrunk in the wash.
Can I ask you what you guys think? Because I have a theory on it. But
okay.
I didn't watch it twice. I probably should have, so I would be able to pick up on, like, the nuances and everything. But when they had the flashback and Colin Farrell and Vince Vaughn first met at the bar, and he was basically gone, so here's the guy who raped your wife. He's not one of our guys. You know,
right.
he's just a guy. But, you know, I feel like as a man, I should do the right thing. Here's his fucking information.
Right.
Here's where he lives. Here's what he looks like. What would compel him to do that? Like, was that guy who ripped his wife one of his guys at one point, and he just said, fuck that, that's not what we're about? Or is he just that connected?
this is what I think, because you see the progression for each of the four main characters in the show. Yes. And Vince Vaughn's character, whose last name is Semyon, he's kind of an up-and-coming, for lack of a better word, gangster, bad guy.
Like Kingpin.
And so he meets Colin Farrell, Del Coro, while he's coming up as a police officer on, you know, on the beat and that sort of thing. Right, and I think they're kind of connected from that moment.
Well, he gave him a bribe, too.
And he's doing it, I think, I mean, I genuinely believe Semyon when he's saying, this isn't right.
Yeah.
This is on our guy. I wanted to do this. I did this quickly. Because when Velcoro goes back and he asks Semyon, well, what do you want from this? And he says, nothing. Maybe I'll call you. Maybe I don't.
Maybe I won't. Yeah.
So it was like a double positive for Vince Vaughn in that, like, you know, he's clearing his conscience going, like, this is fucked up, but I can help this guy.
Right.
At the same time, maybe he'll remember me and I'll have it in on the police force.
Yeah. It's just one of those favors that costs you nothing. You know, it's kind of reminded me of House of Cards. Like, you know, when he hired Meacham as this, he said this favor cost me nothing, and it really didn't. I mean, it didn't cost him anything, and he had basically a loyal cop now. You know, at least that's what he was. I believe he was trying to do. I mean, I believe there was some sincerity in Vince Vaughn, because even though he was portrayed to be, I guess, socially a bad guy, everything he was doing wasn't morally really that bad. You know what I'm saying? Like,
he's probably running like a shady casino and a couple other things.
What were you gonna say, Mark?
Well, I mean, not yet.
Yeah, you're right. Good point. By the way, we're talking first episode. Of course, we don't know what's going to happen.
Right. We're just speculating on what we've seen.
Now,
but also the fact that, you know, Semyon, Vince Vaughn's character, is in the middle of, I mean, you see him literally going from a dive bar when he's talking with Velcoro for the first time to running a multi-million-dollar deal
in a penthouse
that apparently is the catalyst of all these stories coming together. And that's
right. This guy named Casper.
City manager named Casper. He's the head of this deal.
Hold on. I'm sorry, Mark. I didn't mean to. Is that what he was? Because Kelsey and I were trying to figure out who the fuck Casper was. Is that what they said? He was a city manager?
The meeting that they all had with the mayor of Vinci and the Russians and Semyon, they were all supposed to come together. And I guess Casper was supposed to run the presentation that Semyon ended up doing for the audience. And he wasn't there because he was sitting in the back seat with an oversized, evil-looking crow in the back. You've got drums going. Yeah. Who the hell is this guy with the glasses on? He's just driving somewhere, anywhere. But that's the whole crux of the...
Okay, I just didn't know what his position was. I didn't realize he was city manager or city planner or whatever.
Dennis says in the chat, my guess, Frank got ready to kill the wrong guy on purpose. That might be true. We don't know. Who knows? That might be true. But, I mean, going back to Colin Farrell, I mean, I guess it's the easy way to do this show, since it kind of goes back and forth. I think we should just focus on one character at a time. So I guess let's keep with Colin Farrell just to keep his storyline going. That's where we're at. Then when he confronted his quote-unquote kid, even though it's not really his, you know, biological, at least we don't think it's a biological son.
Right. The whole thing starts out with him and his chubby redheaded kid.
When he's at school and he finds out that some kid took his LeBrons, that he had bought him his shoes, and that whole scene was there was some comedy. With also part when he was like Aspen, like when he said the kid's name was Aspen, like Aspen, you know. And then the stepdad, you could see trying to stop him, but knowing he couldn't do anything. Like, I think the stepdad was scared, you know, because he was like, "You idiot, you asshole," you know. But the next scene, when he goes over to that kid's house, and he tells his dad, "Oh yeah, you know, we need to solve this. I was in the cop." When he put the brass knuckles on, I'm not going to lie to you, the first thing I thought was he's going to beat the shit out of this kid. You know, I thought that. I mean, I'm glad I was wrong, but I was like, I just wanted to see how cool, because I did read this season's going to be darker than the first one. That's tough, you know? But when he started beating the shit and he grabbed the kid, don't run from your father, you know, and started beating the ever-living shit out of this guy. And I will come back and fuck him with the head of your dead butt fuck you with the head of your mother's dead corpse or whatever. Like, fucking insane, you know?
The irony in all of this is that he's doing all of this and it's Father's Day when this day.
Yes, that's right. This show's first day was Father's Day. So happy Father's Day, everybody.
Here's the thing, though. Having a lot of buddies who have, you know, the majority of my friends are married and have kids at this point. You know, I have a lot of faux nieces and nephews, and I have a lot of real nieces and nephews. Like, a good chunk of people who are around me have kids. I can see any one of my idiot friends getting that mad, where they would go over and beat the shit, not out of the kid, but just, you know, like when you get that protective over your kid. I mean, granted, we don't really know if it's his kid or not. But right. Dude, it's not that far-fetched. And we've seen so many stories in the news of fathers getting protective over their kids who are kind of helpless. And, you know, when they see a bully, you know.
Okay.
Well, I remember when I was in high school, I beat the shit out of a guy who was picking on one of my younger brothers.
With that being said, would you or any of your, quote, idiot friends, your words, not mine.
Yes, brass knuckles.
Would they also smoke a J, then, or actually, I'm not sorry, down a personal bottle of whiskey.
And then smoke a joint.
Put on a mask, point at the junkie that's smoking whatever it is, probably meth, next to a dumpster, and beat the living shit out of a journalist because now gangster friend wants him to stop writing this expose about how corrupt your town is.
Can we talk about that real quick? Okay, so it wasn't that this gangster friend didn't want it. It was, I think, everyone didn't want it, including the police force and the shady parts. Because, and correct me if I'm wrong, I guess the newspaper was writing this whole, like you were saying, expose of the crime and corruption that was happening in this town, including the police force and including, you know, the casinos. And after the first issue got released, you saw it in both the higher-ups at the police force and the guys who were running the shady casino going, did they mention us? Like, no, we haven't been mentioned my name. And they were like, okay, good. They haven't done it yet. Let's end this before he actually uncovers some of the horrible shit. That's what I got out of it. What did you guys get out of it?
I think that, you know, as far as the exposé is concerned, there, you know, there's obviously probably more than likely probably going to be police corruption as a theme. But when Semyon's confidant was saying, yeah, it's fine, you're not even mentioned, don't even worry about it, and how Semyon's talking to him, I can't remember the exact verbiage, but he was talking about how the whole organization that they have is based on codependence, and
yes.
I can't believe you're sounding so stupid. So then he gets Velcoro to beat the fuck out of this journalist guy. And in the meantime, you know, they also have kind of the back end of it where when Velcoro's going over to, because I'm sorry I'm jumping around, but when he goes over to Casper's house to search and he's talking with his fat as fuck partner about how, hey, you know, we got to treat this as a kidnapping. His partner says, well, why don't we phone it to our superiors? And then Velcoro says, well, don't you think they already know about it? That kind of, you know, weird corruption thing, I think, is definitely going to be a theme.
Yeah, I think the corruption is definitely deeper than even what they're saying. Oh, when they went into that guy's, the fucking guy's house, all like the sex paintings and the...
Holy shit.
What the fuck was that about?
I mean, awesome. Dude, he was an old guy who liked to fuck.
No, that was cool, but then mixed with like the Mexican Santeria shit, I was like, this is weird, you know?
Well, the fact that the entire place was trash, too.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The place was trash. That's a good point.
I was just assuming like an orgy happened the night he got kidnapped, which I'm assuming is probably going to come back later. Like, they're probably going to revisit when he actually got taken and killed.
This is the reason why you need to watch the first season of True Detective, Dutch and Marie, and anybody else that hasn't, is because the cultish weird religion thing is extremely prevalent in that season, and I think it's probably going to rear its head, starting with how creepy and sexually deviant, according to the show, and the Maria statue that's right next to his desk, right next to this. Like, did you guys see the paperweight, like the huge black cock paperweight that was swinging there like this?
Yeah. Sometimes you need big black cock paperweights. I mean,
sometimes it's African American.
You're right. I apologize.
You know, it's fine.
Cock paperweights.
See it. I jerked off to it.
I guess then.
But here's the thing. Sure. Velcoro is, in essence, a broken man. How he got broken, I don't necessarily attribute it exclusively to the fact.
I'm sorry, Mark. I keep getting thrown off here. Is Velcoro Frank or Ray?
Ray.
Ray. Ray is Vince Vaughn, right?
I don't believe his name. His last name is Semyon. I don't know what his first name is.
No.
There's Frank and Ray.
Dutch, shut up. Colin Farrell is Ray Velcoro.
Okay.
Vince Vaughn is Frank Semyon.
Okay. Vince Vaughn is Frank. Colin Farrell's Ray. Okay, cool. That's fine. Okay. I get it.
I'm sorry. I'm just, you know, first episode. I'm trying to get used to it.
You got to get used to it. But
shut up,
Marie. I will say that moving over to Vince Vaughn's character, there is, and I'll be honest, I liked him, but there is some moments where it's tough to forget it's Vince Vaughn. Like when he was sitting there quiet for a moment, Marie goes, "Hi, I'm Vince Vaughn." And everybody just started laughing.
Everybody expects that to be. But here,
Theo's doing good. I agree. He did good.
He did okay. Oh, yeah. Not being Vince Vaughn.
Absolutely. I'm not saying he didn't.
He has the Jennifer Aniston curse where it's like it's hard not to look at someone like not right. like their character they've been in a thousand other things.
Right.
But so far, dude.
He was the first episode, I got to say, he did good. His acting was great. I mean, it was, I thought anyway, for him especially, it was rather, but I think out of all of them, the story that I was most curious about was Taylor Kitsch, whatever his name is.
Taylor Kitsch, which, by the way, I'm looking here at Western Echo says Taylor Kitsch is the worst fucking actor on the planet. Wow.
I'm not talking about his acting skills. I'm talking about plot line.
I don't think he's that bad. Wow.
I'm talking about plot line. And plot line wise, I believe his story is the most interesting. So far, from the first, mind you, they could be completely changed by the second episode. But by the first episode, I was very, very interested in what the fuck happened to him? Why is he so fucked up?
Well, Royce, you should mention to the audience how he got introduced, because it started off with him pulling over this apparently super hot model that just pulled off to the Pacific Coast Highway like a bat out of hell.
Right. Yeah, and he's, oh, is there anything I could do? Maybe back at my place? I'm like, first off, I wouldn't even have to think about that. Yes. Come on. I don't need a ticket that bad. I don't need to get my ticket quota that bad.
From what it seemed like is that she offered to blow him to get out of a ticket. He arrested her, wrote a report up. She probably filed a complaint saying he said that I had to suck his dick if I couldn't get out of the ticket. So there's a conflicting report. At the same time was when that whole newspaper article came down. So the whole higher ups at the police station was like, okay, we're under fire right now of corruption. We're just not even going to deal with this. So you are on leave for right now.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in assuming that?
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, and you could see when his superior was talking to him in the office saying, you're on administrative leave, just take time off.
Take a vacation.
Get your head together. It's not going to stick. Everybody from, you know, the management, you know, the core supervisory team has your back.
Yeah.
But you can tell that it irks him. You know, even the smart ass guy that was saying, hey, so tell me, is it true? Did she really try to blow you and you just turned it down? But the guy doesn't get any enjoyment in life. I mean, especially if he's got a hot ass Spanish girl in his bed and he has to take Viagra.
Yeah. I mean, it was, he's fucked up. I mean, clearly going back to Rachel McAdams' Apple. she is absolutely using, she's another one that's abusing her power, but I believe unlike the other ones, she is using it more for like personal, like her family.
Yes.
For, you know, because like she spent
she
how
called
many
in a raid on her own sister.
Cause we were even saying it after like it happened on the TV show. We're like, oh, that's not a waste of tax dollars. You know, like, oh, that's great. Just, you know, whatever. Just do what you need to do. And even you could tell the other cops were pissed, you know, and they're like, there's nothing in here. You know, when they came like, there, there's nothing here.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like her character and Colin Farrell and Taylor Kitsch, I think that, you know, despite being completely damaged, she does have at least a code or some sort of honor to her. She's not completely broken, because when they went over to serve the papers for eviction to that Spanish family, and then the Spanish lady saying, well, hey, listen, you know, why don't you guys do a real job? Yeah. Try to find my sister. It's been gone for a while. And then that leads her
to do it.
And then that leads her over to the place, the seminary where her dad is, you know, involved. And then they get into the whole thing.
What I don't understand is why would they have someone who she clearly has power, because she could, you know, she could coordinate this raid and this and that. Why would somebody that higher level be delivering foreclosure papers? They usually leave that to peons or off-duty cops.
I was going
to
say, do vice cops normally do that?
Yeah, exactly. She's a vice cop. It didn't seem like a job for her. Like, if you've ever had to, you know, serve somebody or been served, they have badges, but they're just these normal dudes. And like, hey, you know?
First plot hole.
So
vice cops do not serve eviction papers.
I was just curious. No, I was just curious about maybe. I just thought that maybe there's another reason she was doing it other than what. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't seem. And secondly, when do you, even if you're sending a cop, you don't send two cops. Like, they sent her and her partner to serve foreclosure papers?
I think it was
lazy writing, to be honest. Yeah.
I think it's probably like lazy deus ex machina that the writer tried to do. Because the creator or the co-creator for the entire series, Cary Fukunaga, he's not involved in this season anymore. It's all Nick Pizzolatto.
Right.
He's directing and he's writing the whole thing. And you can tell like it's all clearly writer driven. It's, you know, very film noir. It's like Chinatown or L.A. Confidential or even Blade Runner, if you really want to get into it, because that's a noir film, too. It just happens to be in the future.
Right.
I think what happened there, though, is that he was like, OK, I went from point A to point B, you know, point B to point C. Oh, shit. How do I get from C to D? I got to cut through these woods. Let's just make a quick shortcut and hope nobody notices. I think that's what it was.
I don't think so. I mean, yes, you're right.
You think there's something more than that?
Here's why. The first season, because even the first season, if they're following this, there was stuff that did seem innocuous that ended up meaning something. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And so it is very possible. I don't think that with how well written and how detailed they were about so many things, they would just go, oh, here's a little thing. I don't think that they
did
that.
But then again, no, Mark had a point there. It's a completely different writer and director this season.
You're right. But I'm saying if
Same writer, different director, different, because now the writer from the first season is the directing director from the second season.
Right.
All right. Okay.
But also, complete side note before I forget, the first episode for the, you know, for True Detective season 2 was Justin Lin, who just recently directed Furious 7.
Yeah, the Furious director. I knew that. Yeah. But going back to Vince Vaughn. What was his name again? Vaughn?
Frank Semyon.
Going back to Frank. I do believe that. Yeah, he came across, like we were saying earlier, like a nice guy criminal that we're saying in the chat room. I actually believe he's way darker and way more evil than what they're...
Oh, he's probably going to... We're all going to hate him.
And his redhead wife, or wherever, who is she? His girlfriend?
Dude, I see her in everything. Hasn't she won an Oscar at one point?
You know her from either Sherlock Holmes as Dr. Watson's wife. She's been in a few other things. I recognized her once I read the credits from Pride and Prejudice.
Royce, she's one of those girls. It's like she's either a really young old girl or a really old young girl.
Yes, exactly. And her name is
Kelly Riley.
She's still kind of hot to me.
No, I mean she's okay, but her looks were too evil all the time. I wonder what the fuck she's up to because her looks.
She always has those kind of eyes, though, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right, but they focused a lot on her.
Yeah. Which I'm assuming and I'm hoping that she becomes like one of the players later.
Yeah, and you know she did
have one of the more interesting lines in the show where she was admonishing Semyon's confidant when they were all walking out, saying that everybody gets touched.
Right. Yeah, and out of the gate, Domino said he thinks Colin Farrell was the best one out of the gate.
Yeah, I would
so far. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you hear him in interviews talking about Velcoro and his character and how he developed it. And, you know, keep in mind, this is a very, very Irish man. I don't know if anybody's watched the movie In Bruges, which, by the way, is
hilarious.
But just, you know, getting back to the nature of all these guys, like he's the most broken. He's smoking a J. He's drinking. He's doing bumps. Yep. He's just killing the black label bottle. That's in front of him.
Fucking hilarious.
And then when they try to take the bottle away, like, come on, my bottle.
Here's the thing, though. That scene kind of was telling because, Mark, earlier you were saying something, and I kind of disagree with you. You were saying that you thought that Vince Vaughn was he got Colin Farrell to beat up the reporter. I don't think he had to even say anything to him. I think these guys have had an understanding for years, and here's why. Is because... Obviously, Colin Farrell killed the guy who raped his wife, and he could have only have done that based on the information that Vince Vaughn's character gave him. That being said, you kind of have like it's like the ultimate bro code. Like, dude, if there's anything, you don't even have to ask me. I'm just going to do it. So they will just randomly meet for drinks at whatever. And then he just showed up and said, here's all his transcripts. Here's his laptop. You're good to go.
I would agree with you, but again, because I am a dumb, dumb man, and I did go back and watch the episode again, they did implicitly say, hey, this is a problem.
Yeah.
Get Okoro on it.
Okay. Well, then never mind.
Which is the reason why, you know, they did the exchange. Here's his laptop. Here's his files. You know, nice little full envelope for him. You know, obviously the small talk, because, you know, again, they've known each other for a significant amount of time. And there is that kind of very tenuous trust. I mean, he did provide the information so that he could finally be vindicated with his wife.
Right. But it's like, you know, I killed a guy. Like, yeah. That kind of, like, it's like, it's white male and black male at the same time.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're in this together, basically.
Yeah. So I feel like they've had that kind of relationship their entire life. Like, it's always been that type of a back and forth. They've never actually hung out. So that's why it was, like, so awkward for them when they were sitting there and he just started, you know, pouring it. Which, by the way, if you are a mob boss, like, what henchman or lackey is going to go over and grab the bottle? Like, just
leave it alone.
It was like the fact that, like, he actually had to smack
now,
it and go,
it was that,
no, this
now,
is mine.
Here's my theory. This
Should
is,
you know this? I've known Frank for years.
Here's my theory. Here's my theory, and maybe I am completely wrong, but the guy who grabbed it, his henchman, was that really pale redhead guy, right?
Yes.
Okay. I have a theory that he gave him the wrong information, and the dude who really raped his wife was that redhead.
I don't think so, but Matt, you know what?
It could be completely wrong, but
knowing HBO shows, I wouldn't be surprised.
Because
they went that way.
All I'm doing is looking for pale redheads to see who may be the father, and it just seems like he would protect that dude. You know what I mean? But maybe I'm wrong.
That's a hell of a reach, Royce.
I know it is. But then again, hold on.
Is the wife not a redhead?
It's a hell of a reach. But have you seen True Detective season one? There's a lot of things that were not expected in that one. I mean, who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. But this is the first episode. This is the fun part about it. You can guess whatever you want.
That is a good point. Yeah. You know, and again, Velcoro's got a code too. I mean, you know, in his own twisted way, calling your son a fat pussy when you're trying to find out who stole his shoes. That's father of the year material, because immediately after he was done arguing, and then the stepdad's like, I want to kick your ass, but I can't because you're fucking you're Colin Farrell.
You're Colin Farrell.
He's apologizing to him on that electronic voice recorder that he was, you know, telling the family law attorney. Crap, we forgot about that. That his wife is in the midst of divorcing
and
him.
And she wants full custody. Yeah, and that's what Dennis was saying earlier in the chat room. He goes, you know, he's not that smart because he goes and beats up this kid right after asking for custody. You know, beats up the kid's dad right after asking for custody.
Well, here's the thing.
Is
a dirty lawyer, though, because remember,
she gave him cash.
Vince Vaughn said, have you talked to my chick yet?
No, and not even that.
It was his lawyer. So apparently they have, you know what? No, I'm going to amend what I say. Apparently, I guess they have a little bit of a relationship outside of doing things for each other.
Because when he threw all the cash on there, she's like, I don't think you get this. He goes, what, you like paying taxes? Like, it was just a really, like, just take the cash and do what needs to be done, you know?
And that actress, the family, the lawyer that Frank referred to Ray, I've seen that actress before, too. I just can't put my finger on where she's been. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a big take on L.A. Noire. Like, they set it up that way. I mean, it was very dark. Everything, even every shot was dark. Like, literally filming wise, every shot is filmed with darker hues. You know, there's not any real brightness. At least even the first episode, there's not really any as much color in it as there would be, you know. And I just thought that it's setting a dark tone. The first episode, they're piecing stuff together. But I really feel like it's going to get way darker and way worse. And I agree with you, Mark. I believe they're going to go into the occult somehow. Like I said, that crow mask, that has to be some sort of ritual bullshit. You know, that crow mask that was in the back seat, or bird mask, where the fuck that was.
Was that a mask? I thought it was like an actual statue. I didn't know
of like a totem pole.
See, it looked to me like one of those masks that that you wear. Who knows?
I'll be right back.
They never explicitly said what it was. I thought it was a mask. And I will say they did a great job until not even halfway through that dead guy that was there. You thought he was alive until he fell over. You're like, where's this guy driving to? You know, where's this guy going?
Maybe he was just sleepy. I don't know.
Yeah. And then he just fucking fall. And he has rigor mortis. So he was killed sitting because he's still like he's locked in that position.
Yeah. Not only was he killed in that seated position, but they also there was a severe pelvic injury, which I'm assuming his dick and balls are gone. And then they also burned his eyes out with acid.
Yes.
Not to mention the fact that he's, you know, a sexual deviant. He's got all this cool sexual artwork all over the place. But Ray and his fat partner were even mentioning, you know, hey, if there's the fat partner said, if I ever get killed or if I die, you have my permission to burn all my shit because I thought that I was bad. This guy is way, way worse.
I would kind of be proud if that was me. I would be proud of having leaving that behind because that would be the last final shock to everybody. Like, what the fuck? You know? Well, not if they know me. I guess it wouldn't be that big of a shock. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Family and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I got to say, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the first it's hard. But see, with a show like this, it's so serialized. It's even hard to judge one episode because until you see what they're putting together, then you go, oh, I get what they're – you know what I mean? Like, it's really difficult since it's not compartmentalized as much. You know they're setting up a story, and you know there's stuff to talk about, but it always felt like, at least for me, the first season of True Detective felt like one really long movie. It felt like it was filmed like one really long movie, if that makes sense, you know? It didn't feel like it was filmed episodically. It felt like it was filmed like a movie in terms of how the pacing, what they do, the back and forth between characters, you know? Even more than Game of Thrones, I thought.
Well, it also... I guess it doesn't help. Doesn't help sounds negative. I don't want to sound negative because I am, in fact, you know, a fan of the show and the series and everything else. And I was a fan of the first episode, too. I thought it was it obviously set the tone, like you said.
Right.
I think that if there was going to be a comparable location to be set as far as all this, Los Angeles is perfect as opposed to the swamps of Louisiana. Right. But the thing about how, you know, you've got all these people that are semi-connected. You're trying to establish a rapport with the audience. Who am I going to care about? Who am I going to follow? This guy looks interesting. Oh, my gosh, this is what happened. Their past is affecting them in this way. So, you know, it is confusing, but it is, like you said, the first episode. So they're just trying to establish, like, you're going to start knowing people. These are the names that you have to start knowing. These are the situations that they're in. One thing that we didn't mention was the whole thing where everyone's broken and everyone's going through their problems. But I guess Semyon was really counting on this plan, this whole high-speed rail thing.
Yes.
That's going to be happening in conjunction with the mayor and the Russians. And I guess the Russians got cold feet at the very last minute.
All the council people they paid off. And
this old guy, this Casper, the city manager, the guy that everybody is looking for or is connected to somehow, he's the catalyst behind it.
Oh, by the way, Mark, the lawyer is Molly Hagan, and you've seen her all over TV. When she was young, you saw her in Some Kind of Wonderful, maybe.
I didn't see that movie.
Yeah, well, she's all over TV,
apparently.
I've seen
it for them, but I do recognize that, you know, like one of those, like, character actors. You've seen them before. You just can't put your finger on what their name is or what movie that they were on until after the fact. Oh, my gosh, there he is. There she is.
Yeah. Domino says True Detective season 2 had the same energy as season 1. I think it's going to develop on its own in each 3 or 4 episodes, but it's on par as far as we know with season 1. I agree. Yeah, I agree. I didn't, like I said, it left me wanting to know more about all the characters. That's a sign of a good show, in my opinion. It left me wanting to know, okay, what the fuck happened to these people, you know? Because you know they're fucked, and you know they're fucked up, but you see these glimpses of it, but I kind of want to know, how did they get this fucked up, you know?
Well, another interesting thing too is that all of their baggage, their mountains and mountains of baggage, are going to undeniably be meshed together, whether they like it or not. And how is that going to affect not only their relationship with each other, not only their relationship working together, but how the investigation of this one case? Because, like True Detective, it started off with just a singular case, and then it kind of gestated into this like whole big thing. It was a full blown investigation and that type of thing.
The real life town that inspired True Detective. Did you hear about this?
Vinci?
Yeah, this real life town that inspired True Detective season 2. It's back in 2004, Nicole Pizzolatto teased the second season of True Detective by saying that he was trying to capture the psychological ambience of Southern California, telling the TCA he was hoping to set the season in the places that don't get much press and where you wouldn't normally set a television show. Well, we found that Trudy is the second season that is set in and around the fictional town of Vinci, a business community on the fringes of Los Angeles, judging from Sunday night's season premiere. The community was apparently the real town is the city of Vernon in California. Pizzolio didn't have to delve deep into a Lovecraftian myth, so it's an inspiration for this year as the Toll Variety Fair. He only had to look a few miles south of downtown LA to find the city of Vernon, an industrial wasteland where corruption charges outnumber people. Oh, okay. So this is some of the shit's from real town and real shit. As the LA Times history of the city puts it, criminality has been baked into Vernon's DNA since the very beginning. Here's a picture of the actual town that they're referring to, Vernon, where they filmed it.
Well, again, I mentioned that, you know, California was perfect as far as, you know, in location, because the California's got a huge, just an immense history of just really weird shit, really infamous cases, you know, Black Dahlia, Charles Manson, Zodiac. Obviously, that was in Southern California. That was in Northern California. But, you know, I'm sure it's based on some sort of truth that happened prior.
Well, as one political rival told Times, in 1925, in that town, you did not file papers at the city hall. You simply hand him the John. He puts him in his pocket. If he is in favor of their proposition, it goes through. If he's opposed, that's the last you'll hear of it. Vernon only included a small handful of residents. Its population has hovered to around 100, which most are owned by the city, allowing local bosses to create a powerful network of political patronage. With taxes from businesses flowing in, they were also able to redirect the city funds to their own pockets. After surviving corruption charges that brought down four high-ranking members of Vernon's oligarchy, Leonis died in 1953, a very rich man, and his grandson, Malberg, inherited both his fortune and his political influence. He was elected mayor in 1978, didn't leave office for another 3 decades. Vernon had no competitive elections. From 1980 to 2006, they never had a competitive election.
Are you talking about the actual...
The actual town that they're basing this off of, Vernon.
Okay.
Vernon. I know you watched Walkback. Vernon, California. Malberg pops up in True Detective as an obvious inspiration for the city mayor who lives in posh digs in Beverly Hills. In real life, Malberg was convicted of voter fraud in 2009 after it came up that he had been falsifying Vernon addresses and really lived in Hancock Park Mansion he'd inherited from his grandfather. Yeah, that's the same thing with like season one of True Detective. A lot of the things were based on real things. Real crime stories, like, and that's that makes it even sicker, in my opinion. But which, in
sort
a good,
like Law and Order,
yeah, it's crazy. It's like Law and Order, but if the people could act, it's weird.
Yeah.
Right.
Google The Yellow King before you start watching True Detective Dutch. That'll be a good primer for you.
Yeah, it's right. It's
and or the word Carcosa.
Carcosa. All
right. You're cursing at me in Colombia.
He might be. He might be. I don't know. You just got a Colombian hex on you. yeah, I'm really interested to see where it's going to go. And I honestly believe that out of all the characters, Vince Vaughn's character is going to turn out to be the evilest, shittiest one. I mean, because they're setting him up to be such a nice guy. And if it's anything like True Detective, the first season, there's no nice guys. No one's nice. Everyone's bad.
There was one thing that stood out to me when Vince Vaughn's character was talking to the hot old young redhead.
His wife?
My
wife.
When he was getting ready in the morning, he said, "You're looking at what used to be a man." Like, yeah. I thought there was some weight to that. And there's obviously going to be some kind of history. So apparently he has done some shit and she knows all about it.
I think they're doing shit and she's fine with it because in the previews, this isn't a spoiler. It's not in the primer for the second episode or anything else. But one of the sound bites that they have of Frank, Vince Vaughn, saying that sometimes your best self is your worst self. And so I think like Royce is saying, he is completely vested. He will be a bad guy. He's out to get his. He's not very good with cufflinks, but that's beside the point.
Once again, going back to the really quick, because I did like this, going back to the title, The Western Book of the Dead. I really feel this is a mixture of LA noir and like a Western in terms of pacing, in terms of what they're doing in it, because some scenes did kind of feel like, I don't know, example, kind of like Unforgiven, you know, dark, Western-y, specifically Colin Farrell. I mean, the guy fucking is a cowboy, you know, the way he talks, basically, the way he acts. Yeah.
Got a bolo tie on.
Yeah, he had a fucking bolo tie and a fucking Marlboro Man mustache. So,
You'd have to be a badass to pull off both those things at the same time.
And he is.
The Irish actor that pulled it off.
Irish actor. Yes, exactly. That's right. Irish actor that did that.
Which I kind of sort of hope that whenever he was drinking from the brown bag or the black label bottle, I really hope that one of those are actually real.
Yes.
Because when Frank's talking with Ray and he's like, you know, you're supposed to savor that. And then Ray says, yeah, let me try that again. And he just slugs another shot of black label down. I was, holy shit, you are a man. Your liver is probably dead, but you are a man.
Now, apparently the HBO's True Detective returned for a second season with a new cast Sunday and claimed 3.2 million same-day viewers, up from 2.3 million for the series debut last year. True was followed by premieres of comedies Ballers and then The Brink. Yeah, that's fucking good.
I think they were really smart because they basically put that show in the same time slot of Game of Thrones. Well, why wouldn't they have a three share on that one?
They did the same thing in essence, you know, because Game of Thrones is obviously not a comedy. Neither is True Detective. Right. They've got gravitas coming out of their ass, and then you could have
the same type of.
So you have something lighthearted. So you follow up Game of Thrones with Silicon Valley and Veep, and then by the same token, you've got Ballers, which is I haven't seen an episode, but I've been led to be told that it's like a sports version of Entourage. Yes. And then The Brink with Tim Robbins and Jack Black. I haven't seen that episode either.
I
think Jack Black is obviously going to be comedic gold, right?
No.
I do like Tenacious D.
Yeah, so did I. But that's it.
Exactly.
True Detective season 2 literary references explained. Now, I was reading this, and this you guys might I thought would find this interesting. We already explained the Western Book of the Dead and the references made to the True Detective season 2 first episode. Now we're diving into the smaller stuff. Books that appear on screen, names of significant themes that are likely to carry out
Mark,
throughout the season.
Mark, stop adjusting your hair.
It's a nervous tick.
Yeah.
You have beautiful hair. We get it. Stop touching it all the time.
The following is a comprehensive guide to the literary references in the True Detective 2. Anagon. First things first, Rachel McAdams' character's name is
Antigone.
Yeah, sorry. Socrates' tragic play, Antigone and Ismen are sisters with two dead brothers. They're both dead, leading opposite sides Civil War. Antigone wants to bury blah, blah, blah. Okay. So True Detective Rachel McAdams' character also has two siblings who died by suicide. Did you catch that? Both of them died by suicide?
No, I did not.
Well, apparently they did.
But I guess her sister is called Athena, which their father was referring to as the goddess of love, but that's not the goddess of love.
It's not.
That was a reach.
And then you have Meister Eckhart. The Western Book of the Dead quotes Eckhart more than once. And Meister Eckhart's book is shown on the desk in a future episode of True Detective. Eckhart was a German theologian, philosopher, and mystic who lived between 1260 and 1328. He was tried for heresy by Pope John whatever. But
can I ask a question?
Sure.
Is this whole thing written by a guy who's just speculating as a fan or someone who's on the inside actually saying
Whoever's writing this has already seen the first three episodes, so I'm assuming it's Entertainment Weekly. They've seen the first three, so they're probably talking about that. But let us remember how...
That's kind of shitty on their part to, like, give that much information up then.
It's not that much. It doesn't necessarily mean anything that's going to happen.
Well, just saying that, like, oh, okay, this look for... You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Well, not directly influencing, but, you know, it's kind of alluding to where the plot is probably going to lead. Like, the novel The Yellow King, that's primarily the catalyst for season one of True Detective.
Right.
So everything is based off of ancient literary work, but with
not all ancient. Some of it's more noir and stuff like that.
More contemporary.
Well, okay, yeah.
And by the way, I also want to talk about who is that weird girl singing the depressing song? You know what I'm talking about when you walk into the bar.
Lana Del Rey Light.
Her name is Lyra Lynn's. Lyra Lynn's bar's spooky song for True Detective.
That's what should have been that. You can play it. That's fine. This song.
Yes. You know what somebody named?
Instead of the Leonard Cohen song.
Somebody removed. Well, then you'll love this, Mark. Somebody removed the Leonard Cohen song and did the intro with this song.
Really?
Yeah, here. It's in Rolling Stones. I'll post it in the chat. It's the first video on top. If you want to check it out later, someone already thought it was thinking along the same lines. See? And what's basically, it's they're playing her song over the intro.
Here's the other thing, too. Yeah. During this whole scene and the stare-off contest between Frank and Ray, and did anyone notice that this is the shittiest, most depressing bar in Los Angeles County?
Oh, God,
I love bars like that, though.
I mean, there's like four people in there. She's singing like it's her last day on Earth. We've got a very nice bartender, a very nice waitress that's checking up on Ray, but also has a gnarly scar on her face, probably from a knife fight with her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, I was like wondering why they added that. But from what you guys are saying, this show is kind of been known to go with callbacks. So maybe we'll find out later. Maybe we won't.
As with any story that deals specifically with noir, sex is bad. Women are property. They're used, abused.
Yep.
All the guys are tough. Many, many actions.
So based on real life, they're bad.
No, inside
property
in the 50s, maybe Dutch.
Yes.
Not now.
No. I mean, maybe Saudi Arabia.
So you're telling me I'm doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong.
Damn it.
I guess that's going to wrap up our first show. I really, 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 like, I'm looking
you're
forward.
You're doing it wrong.
I'm really looking forward to the next episode. But you know what? Because of this song, I think this is a new outro song for the show.
There we go.
I liked it. I'm definitely excited to see the next one on Sunday. Also shown prominently in the titles now that I'm noticing is Rachel McAdams' Apple Hippie Dad, and I believe he's going to have a bigger role too, because like I think we all pointed out, wow, that's a well-known actor, and I wouldn't think they would just get him for a small like, hey, I'm your dad
exactly.
And I'm a hippie.
Exactly.
Only because an actor like that, I'm assuming they're going to utilize. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's not a setup to a backstory kind of guy. He's a continuing character kind of guy.
I'm jumping on what you said previously, Roy. Mm-hmm. So all props to you, but I think that Vince Vaughn, Frank Semien, the creepo asshole gangster.
Yeah,
thing
yeah.
that he's got is just going to amp up starting with
oh yeah
episode.
Oh I agree I absolutely agree 100%. I think that we're here. Thank you for listening, guys. We appreciate it. The show's going to be up for download if you came in late on morelikeradio.com downloads. It's going to be up there, but the easiest way to follow it is go on Facebook, just search for More Like TV, like the page. I'm going to be posting all the stuff there. Let us know what you want to talk about. Post links, whatever you want, and let us know what other shows we should talk about. Thank you for listening, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much for listening.
Later, guys.
Bird.